Jeff. Jeff. J-E-F-F, Jeff. J-E-F-F, Jeff.
AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. Jeff Stein is our national and presidential expert, noted author. You find his books at Next Chapter Books, as well as also TotallyIowa.com, the Iowa Business Reports, the daily show he does down in Iowa, as well as the Iowa Politics Report, which comes to us from KXEL, Cedar Falls, Waterloo. Hi, Jeff.
Matthew, good Wednesday afternoon. How are you?
I'm doing very well. Indeed, it was, let's get right into it with the State of the Union speech last night. Not a bad speech. I mean, overall, as far as these speeches go, it didn't go too long. I mean, he had a lot of meat in there as far as policy and, taking on Russia, and even had one or two slightly controversial moments in the audience. So overall, I thought, a pretty entertaining, at least, State of the Union.
That's what I was going to watch on TV last night. Dang it.
Were you watching that the Scandinavian reality show from Sweden? It's like, what's my Swedish industry? Were you watching that?
What Swedish armaments are we sending to Ukraine? That's what's behind door number three. All right. So these speeches, and I don't care who's giving it, they're dreadful, typically, because they feel the need to cram everything in. And the last time I heard any speech that analysts said it was really any State of the Union speech that was coherent and really flowed is never. And the reason is what you have to understand is going on in the White House, everybody's got their pet program and they're all fighting to get mentioned in the State of the Union.
Yes.
And that's why sometimes it's just disjointed as all get out.
What was the book? Now, what was the book about that, by the way? There was a book about the guy I was talking about. The entire process for State of the Union was like a month long, everyone lobbying to get into the speech, and the poor speechwriter trying to get everything in there. There was a book about that. It was brilliant.
Well, it clearly is not one I wrote because I don't recall it in any way, shape, or form. But the book that you wrote on that topic, Matt, and I'm sure people will look for it now. It's one of these things where everybody wants to get in. Here's where it was even more challenging this time. Is this, usually State of the Union does what? Sets out a nice domestic agenda. Well, we've got a little crisis going on in Ukraine. And so how do you deftly transition from the Ukraine stuff to happy warrior domestic policy? It's really tough. And I heard a lot of folks, even on the left, saying, boy, there just wasn't, it just seemed to meander. Okay, fine. They're called chapters, in essence, like reading a book. Sometimes you just have to say, this is where a new chapter starts. Go for the content. Don't go for the style. By all accounts, it was a very strong speech in terms of the tone against Russia. There are some who are picking apart some of the details, but the bottom line is, and the Ukrainians don't think he went far enough.
All right, fine.
We'll get
to that. The no-fly zone. We'll get to that in a sec here. Okay.
Well, no, I'm just saying that. Well, even with regard to defense, just generally defense. I mean, but again, when you're the one being bombed, I understand why your viewpoint is a little different.
Yeah.
Started strong, ended strong. The thing that's interesting is without saying build back better, he wanted to reintroduce additional components. That is the only way these things are going to get passed. I do take a little exception with the fact that they now are trotting everybody out on the road today, which is what they do after every State of the Union, and they're putting up signs that say, Building Back America. Mm-hmm. Guys, get rid of anything that says building or back. Just get rid of it because it's now too tainted. But emphasize your specific proposals. Now you got a shot at getting independents to buy in.
I don't know if I agree with on that one because I'm aspiring to build America back. And the reason why I say that is because the Democrats allowed Republicans to turn the term Obamacare into a bad word. Now, Democrats are like, oh, that's right. And the reason why, that was a signature piece of legislation that should have won the Democrats the government for decades, and the Republicans masterfully convinced especially moderate Democrats to apologize profusely for daring to try to pass Obamacare and toxified it for 4 years. And now all of a sudden they realize, oh, yeah, that was a good piece of legislation. It was a good piece of legislation. And I think when you see the Republicans trying to take credit for the infrastructure bills that they proudly voted against, I think that they know that that's I'm not convinced it's necessarily as toxic as you think it is. I think it has actually got, it's Biden's deal. And as much as I think that it annoys Republicans when he kept coming back to jobs and working in steel mills and stuff like that, the blue collar shtick. Let's do it that way. The blue collar shtick. They all do it. But when he does it, I mean, Biden's believable at it because that kind of feels like who that dude is, man. He does have a very rust belt kind of quality to him. And I think that that's he seems to be pretty content on if this is the hill I'm going to lose on, I'll lose on this hill.
Well, that is the reputation. That is how he has made his name. That is the image he has cultivated for a half century of public life. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. What I'm saying is sometimes, and you and I had a similar conversation about Dr. Fauci. There's a point at which it doesn't matter what the message is. The messenger may be so tainted. Well, with this, call it anything else, but don't have it be so closely tied to the other thing that you then lead people to think of it. Okay, that's the only thing I'm saying is that they want to push a strong domestic agenda, which they absolutely need to in this midterm election. They've got to give their people in Congress something to run on. They've got to be able to say, despite the obstructionism from those on the right, we did A, B, and C, and oh, wait, the pandemic came to a virtual end, down to an endemic, and oh, wait, we had the start of World War III that our guy deftly made sure didn't happen. Those are the key talking points if they want to win when the election is held in, 8 months?
Well, but you see, here's where I'm also going to disagree with you, though, on this, because I understand what you're talking about with Fauci. And I think Fauci himself became the political football. And I mean, even today, Jordan is saying, well, we're going to have to do a full investigation into him if we win the House. And, that's their new Hillary Clinton. But right. But when you look at what, here's the thing I'm going to say is no one who's screaming, let's go Brandon, is going to say, I mean, it takes a tornado scouring Western Kentucky clean for people to sit back and say, I thought he was horrible, but here he is trying to help. And that is where we are as a country. It takes basically you falling down as many flights of steps as you possibly can and realizing the hand that's trying to help you is Joe Biden for these people to realize, oh, I guess he's not the villain that I've been made out. And even so, there were still people that were screaming, let's go Brandon, as they went past him, thinking, oh, I'm getting him as the guys here to try to help them with tornado damage. Now, that said, though... I think Biden is smart enough to not sit there and say, I'm going to sacrifice everything to try to win over 5 votes who will never vote for me anyway. The moderates are where everything is at. They're still not, even though a lot of them went back to Trump, they're still looking for a reason to not vote Republican. And so I'm going to be who I am. The zealots on the right are not going to change their mind, and I think that's really what scares the Republicans, is that he's not playing their game like a lot of Democrats have over the last few decades.
Well, I'm sorry to jump in a moment ago. I thought you were done with the point, so I apologize. But I don't think we're saying different things. Mm-hmm. I think we're talking about two different things. For example, you're referring to the Republicans in Congress, and you're right; they're lost with regard to anything this president comes up with. I'm talking about this president speaking to American independents who are going to decide the next election, the ones who are not so poisoned, the ones who don't think it's okay for two Republican representatives to start chanting build the wall during a State of the Union message.
Oh, those two, right?
That's
drunks.
That's not a good optic, you know? I mean, when Thelma and Louise go out there and start, chanting, well, hooray, I don't think that sits well. And so what I'm saying is, and again, we're not talking about different things. We're talking about Biden needs to get the moderates, whether they're moderates in Congress or whether they are voters who ultimately will reward his party for taking care of certain things. But the GOP is measuring the Speaker's office for curtains for Kevin McCarthy, and so many of the folks who are pushing to get a Republican majority in Congress don't want him to be the speaker. They want Donald Trump to be, and they're living that fantasy out. What? So you know, the folks on the right are settled. I could hear you just growling and gritting your teeth.
Well, I still think it's kind of I think the Republicans are fooling themselves that this is going to be a cakewalk in November.
I totally agree. If any party has historically done its best to not be able to get out of its own way, that's the party. Because again, when you start talking, and this is a very important point, when you start talking about these generic ballot polls, you know that I hate those because they mean nothing. Would you vote for a Republican or a Democrat? Who cares? Put a name next to it. And let's talk about the voter registration advantage in a district. Let's talk about where I live in the state of Iowa. You have four congressional districts. Three of the four have Democrat voter registration advantage over Republican. And yet there's all this buzz about the Democrat Party is in disarray, Democratic Party politics is in disarray in the state, and Republicans think it's going to be a cakewalk. Do the math, people.
Well, and I think that's a lot of the Republican press telling things that the Democrats are in disarray. But going back to my point, yes. when the thing that's helped Republicans year after year is Democrats that feel like they have to apologize for being Democrats. When mm-hmm. when you've had success, Barack Obama, Bill Clinton, back when he ran. When you had success is when Democrats are proud Democrats. And even Governor Walz here, when he was running down and won, which was a district that did lean Republican, he was able to win that district because he was never shied away from being a proud Democrat, and he never once apologized for being that. And I think that's what scares Republicans about Biden, is because he does not shy away from being a proud Democrat. And as a matter of fact, one of the things I thought was interesting, the pre-Buttles, the post-Buttles, the weird far-right extreme MST3King of the speech during the speech while they're in Congress. I mean, the Republicans are frantically trying to get message away from Biden because I think they're scared this is a guy that is not going to sit there and say, I apologize for Obamacare. He's just not going to be that guy.
Did you come up with MST3ing yourself? Is that your line?
No, gosh. Those guys are brilliant. I give every bit of credit for them. Yeah, they are.
No, but it's outstanding. Whoever came up with the line to refer to Thelma and Louise, that's tremendous. But, no, you will find in a speech like this what you're looking for to a very large degree. Okay, if you actually boil it down to text, you've got the president talking tough on Ukraine, on the Ukraine situation. There, some have said, okay, you know, we're still in it. Let's not do a victory lap. Okay, that's fair. Republicans usually do the victory lap well before, you know, declare mission accomplished and all that. But yeah, it's good counsel. We're in something that's not within our control. Putin did underestimate the Ukrainians and the world resolve. There's no question about that. And if the best you can do in criticizing the speech is say it kind of meandered, A, I don't care. I'm going for content. And B, at the end when he said, go get them, I don't know. I didn't read it as a stage instruction for his handlers, but there are some who are trying to claim that's the way it is. It was the State of the Union message. They come, they go. The key is, can they sell what's left of the big, broad agenda to Americans who then lean on their representatives, especially those Republicans in very unsafe districts?
Boebert, God, speaking of unsafe, because she just got redistricted into a leans Dem district. The Boebert, it was interesting. Here's the one thing about that clown that I thought was, she came up with her line about Afghanistan. She clearly was not listening to what Joe Biden was saying at the time. She was just waiting for, he's talking about the military. Here it is. And you know, she, you know, obviously it was an incredibly inappropriate time to say it. But, you know, this is the problem with the Republicans have. They have these districts now, and hers not anymore, but these unbelievably safe Republican districts where a bag of cats can basically win the Republican nomination and the seat. And the reality is she had worked on that line all day. She was waiting for the moment to say it. She didn't even listen to the speech. She just screamed it. And then, you know, it gives the Republicans, I mean, the Senate Republicans, look at these guys. as a bunch of clowns, and they don't quite know what to do with them. But the reality is that this is kind of the problem the Republicans have when you look at this upcoming election. Is this is the image they put out there as Thelma and Louise, as you said.
Well, and again, it's the stuff that grabs headlines for no good reason. I mean, for example, let's say that you're Boebert. You're the one who, as I recall, you know, likes to have slogans written on your dress. Wasn't she the one who did the anti-AOC ball gown kind of thing?
So
she had on her leather jacket, I guess, drill baby drill, which is basically saying, let's get domestic oil production going. You could have done that. You could have gotten all the positive run that your supporters could muster around it. You'd be on all the usual suspects cable channels, and it's subtle. These people are not subtle. They believe the only way to do it is to scream in your face. Yet they're the very ones who complain when people with a different political persuasion speak up against them.
Mm-hmm. Jeff, go check out your Twitter feed really quick while we're in break. There's a meme. It's up on my Twitter feed. You got to go see it from the State of the Union. It's brilliant. Jeff Stein's joining us. When we do return, we will talk a little bit more about Ukraine and the problem that we have and how we deal with this. Jeff Stein joins us on a Wednesday, the Matt McNeil Show, right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show. Jeff Stein joining us for his usual weekly visit. Did you see the meme?
Oh, heavens. Yeah, I did. Well, usually,
go to Twitter. Go to Twitter. Matt McNeil Show on Twitter. Go see it over there, people.
Yeah, it's very good, and I gave it a like myself. I mean, you know, when in the past, when he was running for president, I think the second time coming through Iowa, I talked with Biden on a couple of occasions. You know, great conversations, et cetera, for what it, and, you know, I have, you know, great respect for him. For some reason, you know, many times during this presidency, he looks like Jeff Dunham's ventriloquism dummy, Walter.
He
right?
does. He does look like him.
Okay. And I like Walter. That's not the point. But that's the look that he's giving them. And it's just, oh, my.
It's just, it's just precious.
The Real Housewives of Capitol Hill. Is that where we're going?
Oh just the bag of rocks and the bag of cats.
I have to look away.
Yeah, it does. All right, let's Ukraine here. You had brought up the whole thing, and I understand the Ukrainian, one of the government officials, the ambassador was very grateful and was, you know, obviously very touched, I think, by the bipartisan support for Ukraine shown at the State of the Union. One of the politicians came on out and was critical of the no-fly zone. But this is the problem. If we create a no-fly zone, then we're potentially shooting down Russian jets. We start shooting down Russian jets. This is no longer just between Russia and Ukraine, and the world is at war. And so I think that has to be something. I mean, it's hard, and I will commend the Ukrainian Air Force has done a very good job. I was very impressed with their ability out there. But at the same time, you can't if Ukraine was NATO— Yes, absolutely. But they're not. Henceforth, that's the box that we're put in.
Harold Ford Jr., formerly Democrat representative, he's still a Democrat, Democratic representative from Tennessee in the past, put a nice pin in a balloon of a Fox News commentator by saying, okay, I understand the passion, but if step one is a no-fly zone, to your point, step two, a Russian jet gets shot down, what's step three? And that's the problem.
Yep.
You've got to think this through to steps three, four, five, and six. And this is nothing against the sovereignty of Ukraine or the admirable fight by the Ukrainian people. But why they may want a no-fly zone, again, I understand they're the ones with bombs falling. But that may be the thing that accelerates you into a nuclear conflict with people who, at multiple levels of the Russian government, have pointed out recently, this week, including today, that they have nuclear weapons, in case anyone forgot.
Mm-hmm. They've announced, started putting out some of the numbers here. Here's the things. I don't believe the Russian numbers at all. It sounds like in Belarus, which is where a lot of the injured and dead are Russians are going right now, they're being evac to, that their morgues are absolutely full to capacity, that the Russians have lost indeed quite a few people and quite a few injured people as well. They're saying the Russian troop count is not 498 and 1597, but I think that's low. Ukraine's claim that it's killed more than 5,300 Russian troops. I would also say that's probably too high because obviously they're kind of working on the hometown spirit sort of thing. But undeniably, now they're saying at least 2,000 civilians have been killed by Vladimir Putin in Ukraine for just being Ukrainian at this point. This is going to get horrible. I mean, really, this is going to get horrible.
Find me a way out. Yeah. That's the trick.
Putin has to leave. He just has to leave. He has to wake up and realize this is it's going to destroy his country's economy. He's got to wake up and leave. He just got to realize this was a mistake. I mean, I just don't think that's within his mind.
I spoke with a Russian analyst, I think it was last week, an analyst, he analyzes the Soviet Union. He's an American. Okay, I want to get my terminology straight. And he said the thing that he thought would happen is that Putin would take what was Kiev and then say, okay, I will give you back everything except this, the breakaway areas and this other territory that I want. In other words, so he gets a contiguous path to Crimea. He doesn't really have now. And then he would back off and say, well, these people want to be with us anyway. You know, I'll just walk that back. That was presuming it would happen very soon. Well, it's now been a week since I talked to that person, and it didn't happen.
Mm-hmm.
And so, again, the longer it goes, the harder it is for Putin to walk anything back. And until his own people suffer enough, he's not going anywhere, and that's the tragic reality, I think.
And the occupation, because the Ukrainian army is not going to work for him. He might get a few troops from Belarus to help him out, but the reality is he's going to have to send in most of his forces to occupy a major country. That's not going to go well. Talk to the British about the Irish.
Oh, absolutely. And again, I don't think he cares about a lot except legacy, and that's a dangerous position for all of us if he longer cares.
Absolutely. Jeff Stein, once again, the Iowa Politics Report. We'll get that out a little bit later on. By the way, Kim Reynolds did not look the best. Someone needs to tell her to turn off her iPhone. we'll have the Iowa Politics Report coming up here. Jeff, thank you very much. We'll talk to you tomorrow, next week, okay?
The best you got is the iPhone. Okay.
All righty. Hour two is up next.